Radio Prague News.
The Czech gender pay gap is the second widest in the entire EU. Trade unions push to keep big retail stores closed on holidays, and the Constitutional Court rules against Klinika Squatters' appeal to remain in a Prague building. Czech women earn on average 80,000 crowns less per year than men do. This according to Labour and Social Affairs Minister Jana Maláčová, speaking ahead of European Equal Pay Day this Friday. The difference in pay is the second highest in the entire European Union, she said, calling fair remuneration a crucial economic issue. In the EU, on average, women are paid 16% less than men, according to the statistical agency Eurostat. Czech trade unions have launched a campaign to prevent a 2016 law banning large stores from operating on certain public holidays from being amended. Some 80,000 retail workers and supporters of the law have taken to wearing green bracelets with the inscription, "Don't take away our holidays." Currently, stores with a retail space of over 200 square meters must be closed on New Year's Eve, Easter Monday, and other holidays such as Christmas. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has called on the EU to review the sale of ArcelorMittal's steel plant in Ostrava, now due to be sold to the UK-based steelmaker Liberty House. In a letter to EU Competition Commissioner Margrethe Vestager, Mr. Babiš alleges that Liberty House has not laid out a comprehensive investment plan for the steel plant. Czech unions claim the company's plan is unsustainable and inconsistent with EU requirements. For its part, Liberty House said it has a firm growth strategy in place and will invest over 150 million euros into the plant over the next 5 years. Activists have lost an appeal to remain at an abandoned Prague building taken over by squatters in 2014, which now houses the alternative Klinika Social and Arts Center. The Constitutional Court said in a resolution rejecting the appeal that just because a building has been long out of use does not give others the right to occupy it. If the state wants to legalize squatting, it must change the law, the court said. The Žižkov building now belongs to the Railway Infrastructure Administration, which wants to move some of its operations there. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš remains the most popular politician in government, according to the latest STEM agency poll. Just over half of respondents view him favorably. Pirate Party chairman Ivan Bartoš, who placed second with 41% support, has gained the most ground since the previous poll a month ago, up 5 percentage points. In third is the far-right SPD chairman Tomio Okamura at 36% support, while Communist Party chairman Wojtek Filip has the lowest favorability rating at 23%, down 9 percentage points. Czechs are marking All Souls Day, the day of remembrance for friends and loved ones who have passed away. The Roman Catholic holiday involves visiting and tending graves and lighting candles. Around 4 out of 5 Czechs plan to visit a cemetery over the weekend, according to a survey. And finally, the weather. Saturday should be cloudy throughout most of the country with daytime highs of between 9 and 13 degrees Celsius. Rain is likely, especially in the regions of central Bohemia and southern Moravia. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the news for now.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, Andrej Babiš signals Czech intentions to reject a UN agreement on migration. It's 100 years since, in the early days of the Czechoslovak Republic, a Prague mob pulled down a Marian column on Old Town Square. And we also look at how the tradition of Jan Hus came to the fore in the days when Masaryk was president. All that's coming up in today's programme. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš says he will suggest to government that the Czech Republic doesn't sign the UN's Global Compact for Migration, citing ambiguities in its interpretation. The decision mirrors those concluded by the Czech Republic's Central European neighbours Austria and Hungary, who've already announced they won't sign the agreement. Tom McEncrow reports.
Since the unanimous adoption of the non-binding New York Declaration for Refugees and Migrants by the UN General Assembly in 2016, the United Nations has been developing a holistic migration strategy, officially referred to as the Global Compact for Migration. Apart from the United States, which declared its withdrawal in 2017, Hungary and Austria have both recently announced they will not be signing the declaration either. Now it seems the Czech Republic is set to do the same. Speaking in Parliament during Thursday's Prime Minister's questions, Andrej Babiš shared his thoughts on the UN's migration plan.
No one from the outside is going to decide about who can live and work in our country. That is solely up to our businesses, institutions, and government. Nothing has changed in our policy of not accepting illegal migrants. I don't like this pact. It lacks a clear definition, and that could be abused.
Not all share this opinion, however. Mikuláš Peksa from the opposition Pirate Party says this would be a missed opportunity.
We are trying to get these migration floods under control. That means we need a global compact on migration, which would make this possible. To stick one's head in the sand now is absurd.
Mr. Peksa is not alone in his criticism. Professor Peter Kratochvíl of Prague's Institute of International Relations believes this compact is being abused by Mr. Babiš to pamper to his Czech voter base.
The problem is that the Global Compact, as it is called in English, is another legal document that has become the victim of politicking in our region, in not only the Czech Republic, but also in Hungary, Austria and Poland. And the problem is, of course, not the contents of the document, because I doubt the Prime Minister has even read it. It is just another cheap way to, of increasing his popularity at the expense of migrants, because what is enough is the title of the document, because it talks about migration.
Asked about what impact the compact's refusal would have on the Czech Republic, Professor Kratochvíl had this to say.
Not much, because this is a legal document that is not binding in a sense of introducing new rights for the migrants. But of course it sends a message about where the Czech Republic, globally speaking, where it belongs. Because if you look at the list of those countries which are discussing a withdrawal from the compact, it's governments which do not have the best track record of treating migrants fairly. So this is mainly what will happen, and also it will again create rift between those central European countries, including Austria, that oppose migration, and the Western European EU member mainstream.
Peter Kratochvíl, ending that report by Tom McEncrow. This Saturday marks exactly 100 years since the destruction of one of Prague's then best-known landmarks, a Marian column on Old Town Square. The Baroque structure was built in 1650 in gratitude for the end of the Thirty Years' War. However, over 250 years later, it was torn down by an angry mob. They saw it as a symbol of the Habsburg takeover of the Czech lands. Ruth Frankova has more.
The 14-metre Marian column, which was once one of Prague's most imposing monuments, was unveiled in 1652 as a symbol of gratitude for successful defence of the city against the Swedish military in 1648, at the end of the Thirty Years' War. More than 250 years later, on the 3rd of November 1918, it was toppled by an angry mob which considered the monument to be anti-Czech and believed that it stood there for defeat at the Battle of Bílá Hora and centuries of resultant Habsburg oppression. Photographer Eugen Kukla is a member of a group that is lobbying to have the Marian Column rebuilt on the square.
Tearing down the column happened to be at times of real social and political turmoil, 5 days after establishing new Czechoslovakia, and the time was filled with emotions. I just would say that one of the targets was not only the column, but were planned to be the Baroque statues on Charles Bridge, and only the intervention of military forces prevented the crowd from pulling down the beautiful Baroque statues on Charles Bridge. So I would say, well, it was like high emotions and lots of hysteria, etc., etc.
The monument was felled by a group of Prague firemen under the supervision of anarchist writer and bohemian František Sauer, who Kukla says later deeply regretted his actions. Since 1990, the Association for the Renewal of the Marian Column has been lobbying at the Prague Council to have it replaced by a copy, but the plan has been rejected repeatedly. Eugen Kukla explains why he would like to see the column back on the square.
There is no particular, let's say, religious reason. For me, there is not even a political reason. For me, the prime reason is architectural, urbanistic. The column was beautiful, was extremely beautiful, and it's one of the significant and possible steps to revive the center of the city. Some kind of bringing back the point of gravity to the square, which is now in a real state of devastation. There is also a aspect of reconciliation between the, let's say, Protestant part of Czech history and the Roman Catholic part of Czech history. But for me, primarily, it's the possibility of bringing back something that's really missing there.
The destruction of the Marian Column will be marked by a gathering on the Old Town Square on Saturday. A mass for the renewal of the column will be celebrated at the Church of Our Lady before Dean. Following the mass, there will be a procession to a replica of a statue of the Virgin Mary, which once adorned the Baroque monument.
Thank you for that report, Ruth Frankova. When the Czechoslovak Republic was proclaimed in 1918, its primary founder and future president, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, had grand plans for using one of the most famous periods in Czech medieval history as inspiration for what he wanted to be a state based on democratic and humanistic values. In many cases, the references to Hussitism started during the era of the First Republic remain in some form or another until today. Tom McEncrow decided to explore why Hussitism was so important in Masaryk's First Republic and how its elements were combined into the new state.
On the 6th of July 1915, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk gave his famous Geneva speech. Stating that there was no peace between the Czechs and the Austrians, it would serve as the definitive delineation in which Masaryk and his colleagues announced their bid for Czech independence. The date of the speech was chosen to be exactly 500 years after the burning of Jan Hus, the influential Czech theologian whose teachings in the 15th century had led to the emergence of Hussitism, the pre-Protestant Christian Reformation movement which had successfully defended itself against multiple crusades by both the Pope and the Holy Roman Emperor in their subsequent Hussite wars. Historian Pavel Sokup is an expert in Hussite history and, along with his colleagues from the Czech Academy of Sciences, recently held a lecture on how Hussitism was used in the era of the First Republic. He explains why this association with Hus was useful to Masaryk at the time.
Well, the figure of Jan Hus was connected to Hussitism and to what historians call Hussite Revolution. And actually the outcome of Masaryk's struggle for independence in 1918 was also called revolution during the First Republic. So there was certainly some amount of being a rebel against the current state, which was Austria-Hungary. But it must be said that for Masaryk, Jan Hus was not a destructive figure in the first place, but rather someone who founded a tradition of ideals of humanity, as Masaryk called it, someone who was a prominent figure in Masaryk's vision of Czech history, which was a line of great eras from Hussitism through the national revival. So it was appropriate enough for him to start on Hus's Day, something that he considered both a fight against current situation, but a fight that must be led by some idealism, which he connected with Hus. Idealism that was aimed against authoritative regime, in Hus's case, of course, the medieval Catholic Church, in Masaryk's case, Austro-Hungarian state, which was also supported by Catholic Church and cooperated with it very closely.
The symbolic and thematic undertones of the Geneva speech were certainly useful, but they were not the result of a quick fit on the eve of the independence speech. Rather, they emerged out of a 50-year-long historical debate on the role of Hussitism in Czech history, in which the future Czechoslovak president played a prominent role, as Mr. Sokup's colleague, historian Dusan Sofal points out.
We must be aware of the fact that Masaryk was originally a university professor, teacher, and then he was lecturing in the 80s of the 19th century. He made one lecture about Hasidism of the and the tradition of the Czech Brethren and John Hus. And there we have first very strong signs of his reflecting of the Hasid ideals and persons such as Hus, Kelchitsky, and then later Komensky. Their teaching could be understood as a basis on which the national idea can be built.
Masaryk's commitment towards combining the Hussite ideals with those of the new state was famously underlined during his return to Prague in December 1918. Making a train stop in the Hussite-founded city of Tábor, he declared, "Tábor is our program, and we will remain true to it." As medieval historian Pavlina Cermanová explains, Tábor was a useful example of how Masaryk envisaged the new state.
Masaryk saw Táborites and Tábor community as founded on really democratic ideas, as a community of equal people, but still deeply rooted in religion, because Masaryk was a very, very pious man and never separated state and religion. So this democratic and pious community, but based on religion, but not on Catholicism, was really ideal for Masaryk. So it was the program, democracy and religion.
That Masaryk took the Hussites' understanding of religion seriously can be seen from his support to the newly founded Czechoslovak Church, which he characterized as distinctly Hussite. Although in the interests of state unity, the president was careful not to associate himself with religious matters too closely, he did, in the words of one of the church's patriarchs, have a powerful effect on its founding members through his personality and world views. Actively promoting the movement, Masaryk also added a variation of the Hussite motto, "Truth Prevails," into the presidential flag, where it remains until today, and in 1925 even placed a flag bearing the Hussite symbol of the Kalix among the standards adorning Prague Castle, a move that Foreign Minister Edvard Beneš would have to diplomatically explain to an outraged Pope in the Vatican. The president's efforts were supported by wide ranges of the Czech population, whose various groups had already started adopting Hussite symbolism as early as the mid-19th century. In the case of the Czechoslovak legionaries, Hussite symbols were adopted into their insignia during the First World War. In the New Republic, this tradition would be continued under the state sanction, with many of the army's regiments receiving honorific titles bearing the names of national heroes from the era of the Hussite Wars. Another important force among First Republic civil society, the Sokol movement, adopted Hussite themes in their gatherings, most notably in June 1920, when Prague's Strelecký Ostrov and the surrounding river bore witness to a massive battle which used themes from Hussite history, such as the famous warlord Jan Žižka and wider Czech mythology, including the Knights of Blanik, a Czech equivalent of the myth of the return of King Arthur and his knights when times are at their worst, as parallels to the victory in the First World War. The excitement and patriotic sincerity of the time is illustrated through the way the Czech newspaper Národní listy described the reconstruction.
We have the first picture symbolizing the outbreak of war, a time of persecution, resistance, and execution of legionnaires. But in this darkness, the torches of new hope are set aflame, heading towards Blanik and delivered by messengers from outside. Finally, a sound comes echoing from Blanik, the Hussite song, "Ye who are warriors of God." On his white horse and with a mace in his hand, Jan Žižka leads the new knights of Blanik, the legionnaires. Blanik is closing, when suddenly a Czech battleship arrives, a symbol of our might. It's followed by two destroyers. Behind the island, a massive enemy warship appears. Battle commences.
Yet despite the grandeur, there was always place for some Czech self-referential humour. Writing about the aftermath of a similar reenactment in the local pub, the famous Czech anarchist writer František Zauer described a considerably less glamorous scene involving the actors playing the Hussite heroes.
Suddenly, Brother Czech directed a deafening roar at King Sigismund. Karel, stop your group. You're supposed to lose this one. But the emperor cried out and ran after Žižka, whom he saw wielding a mace on top of the table. Red in his face, he shouted at the Czech war hero, "Now I'm going to have my way with you, you rascal. How dare you throw me out of the winery?" and swung his lance as hard as he could after Žižka. The imperial army started rampaging through the Hussite ranks, with blows landing on everyone. Screams and crying could be heard among the warriors, until finally, the Hussites made their escape.
The enthusiastic embracement of Hussitism did not appeal to all branches of Czechoslovak society, as Mr. Sokup explains.
Majority of anti-Hussite troops in the Middle Ages were Germans, and this, of course, was very appropriate for patriotic parties within Czech society. It must be said that the new state, Czechoslovak Republic, did not consist only of Czechs, so the representatives of the Germans living in Czechoslovakia did not share this vision, this positive vision of Hussitism. The Slovaks had no reasons to subscribe to it, and there was, even within Czech-speaking population, a group of conservative Catholics represented by members of hierarchy, Catholic prelates who did not share it either.
The honoration of Hussite heroes, nevertheless, continued, and throughout the 1920s and 1930s, construction works on a vast monument on Prague's Vítkov Hill, topped by a massive equestrian statue of Jan Žižka, were underway. However, the Munich conference took place before the monument could be ceremoniously unveiled, and under the protectorate, Hussite ideas were firmly suppressed. Yet the state's association with Hussitism would return with a vigour once the communists took power in 1948. Mr. Sokup explains the complexities the new power brokers faced when adopting the movement as their own.
The communists embraced Hussitism and their Hussite traditions, and they presented them in positive way, same as the First Republic, only they stressed different aspects. Instead of big thinkers and their ideas of humanity or their religious ideas, the communists, especially in the 50s, in the very schematic Marxist interpretation, they needed the people. There was not one hero, there was the people who acted as a protagonist of the class struggle. And it is very interesting to see how they need to balance between evaluating Hussitism positively and evaluating the First Republic negatively at the same time. So, for example, the military banners of the Czechoslovak legions that we mentioned, they were used during the First Republic for military units of the Czechoslovak army. And they were only replaced in 1953 because they were seen as something that could spoil the popular democratic vision of history, as the communists called it. It is remarkable, for example, that the Bethlehem Chapel, which stands in the old town of Prague, was recreated in 1950s under communists. So the communists rebuilt a monument that actually is a preaching chapel, but they downplayed the religious aspect and they rebuild this monument as a monument of people's struggle for freedom in their own interpretation.
Much of the Hussite symbolism and institutions adopted during the First Republic remain in place until today, whether in the form of the presidential flag, the Czechoslovak church, which now carries the added word Hussite in its name, or in the use of characters such as Jan Žižka and Jan Hus during the annual Sokol gatherings.
That report was by Tom McEncrow, and it's all we have time for right now on Radio Prague. You can, of course, contact us by email at english@radio.cz, or you'll find us on Twitter and on Facebook. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening, folks, and do please join us again soon.